This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's a deep dive on our immune systems. The book is An Elegant Defense. It's a great way that you can introduce yourself to the complexities of the immune system, a lot of great history on how we discovered different parts of our immune system, and also some of the scientific advances that promised to revolutionize our treatment of various illnesses. The author is a Pulitzer Prize winner, Matt Richtel. He's a New York Times writer, and so look for his columns in the Times. And Matt, you know, can you give us a basic primer here? Because, you know, people look at their blood tests and they say, well, you know, my white blood cells, they look a little off, you know, they're too high, they're too low. But then it's kind of like Chinese boxes, isn't it? Because white blood cells subdivide into lymphocytes and neutrophils, monocytes, eosinophils, basophils, and then you get even subtypes of those different compartments. So can you give us some basics on that?
Yeah, I love the question. It's just inscrutable when you get that thing back and you're trying to figure out what matters and what's normal. High level is, we speak of the new science of the immune system. We are only still learning all the degrees of the different molecules and cells that make up, particularly molecules, that make up the immune system, and all these interesting molecules that reside on the surface of these cells. Mm-hmm. So broadly, you've got essentially two circulatory systems in your body. One is your red blood cells, and that's the blood that brings oxygen to your body. And again, here, Dr. Hoffman, please, you know, I will defer, of course, to your mastery. So if I get something wrong, you know, feel free to yell, scream, throw down the phone, whatever you like.
You're doing fine.
you're doing fine.
So far, so good.
And then you've got a circulatory system of white blood cells or lymph. And just to go back to history, but, you know, it was years, probably 16th century, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 17th, where someone was dissecting a dog and noticed what he called milky white veins. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, this doesn't make any sense. And it remained something of a mystery for years. So what is
flowing
made
through those veins? I mean, it should be red.
What's flowing through those things?
Right, yeah.
It's not the red blood I'm familiar with. What is this? So This second circulatory system has many of your immune cells in it, although some immune cells travel in different ways. Mm-hmm. And it's made up of, it can be made up of, depending, a mix of T cells and B cells. Mm-hmm. And let me just set those
aside. It's
like
a highway for your immune response cells. They travel through
that. It's a highway for immune response cells. And again, before we delve into it, just a note about that highway. The immune system has a very unusual role in the body in that it is permitted to travel more readily across boundaries than many other cells, because it needs to reach, like, you wouldn't see a pancreatic cell for the most part up in your heart. Mm-hmm. They stay within their boundaries, but these white blood cells, they stay within the system, and then they bleed out, and they quite literally smell for things. So you mentioned the neutrophils, and if I'm not mistaken, neutrophils are the biggest share of the of the white blood cells.
Usually, and I'd around actually 60%, have to, yeah.
And around 60%, thank you.
And so just to append a note, and this, you may be aware of this, is if you have an infection, We sometimes refer to that in medicine as a left shift. You can actually look at the white blood cell counts. Oh, the white blood cell count's a little high, but oh my goodness, you have 90% neutrophils, and especially young ones, means that they're proliferating in response to an infection. So that a doctor can read your blood test and say, oh my goodness, it's probably a bacterial infection. This doesn't happen so much with viral infections. It doesn't happen so much with cancer, but it's characteristic of a bacterial infection.
And it's one of the ways in general, I'm glad you brought that up, it's one of the ways in general that we are able to measure what's happening in the body is we measure not necessarily the pathogen or disease, but the body's response to the disease. Mm-hmm. And that's a really helpful way by looking at the different levels of these. And again, Dr. Hoffman, correct me if you don't like the characterization, but the neutrophils are part of the of this initial response of the body. They show up almost as if police and fire to a car wreck, mm-hmm. and do take on a whole bunch of functions at that point. Is that a good way to characterize it?
But they're like the immediate. They're the soldiers of the immune system, sort of the Pac-Man of the immune system in a way.
They're the Pac-Men and the generic, and let me hit on Pac-Men. There's a terrific word. So before I say a terrific word, mm-hmm. I want to say, that immunology, is, if some of this sounds confusing to you, and I hope it doesn't, but just bear in mind, it is a language as complex as any other. In fact, some of the words chosen by immunologists have gone down through time by historians as for being noteworthy for being actually sounding exactly opposite of what they do. Mm-hmm. For instance, an antibody.
Right.
It's not against your body at all.
Right.
But the larger point is these words are very complicated as you run into them. So here are the neutrophils, and they show up, and they do, you mentioned Pac-Men, they do something called phagocytosis, P-H-A-G, I'm not going to try to spell it here on the phone, but it's drawn from the Greek, I think it's an eater.
Right.
And they consume some of these nasty invaders, and neutrophils can do it in a variety of ways. They've got all kinds of SWAT capabilities. They can blow things up and reduce them to shreds and use lots of chemicals on them. And they're not alone. So let's just picture, an invasion. The science goes back to about 1900, where a guy named Metchnikoff was looking in his, microscope. He was from Russia, but in Greece on a holiday. And he noticed that when he put splinter into starfish larvae, these cells came up and started eating the invading particles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, whoa, what's going on? This is, if you were to get a splinter, you would see something similar. You mm-hmm. would see a whole bunch of defenders effectively sniff out from their white blood stream that something was afoot, and they would rush to the scene, and they would do two things in the broadest sense. They would destroy things that looked instantly dangerous, but they would also begin a larger surveillance or assessment tool. And now we begin to get in to some of the other cells. Can I mention here, Dr. Hoffman, the dendritic cell?
Mm-hmm. Yep, go.
Okay, so far so good?
You're already surpassing my knowledge of the immune system, so you're doing fine.
Well,
you just wrote a book on it, so
I just wrote a book. Yeah. Somebody wrote the other day in a really nice review in USA Today. I thought he might be a doctor, and I thought, well, at least I have a Halloween costume for next year. I still don't think my wife's going to let me get away with having too strong opinions in our household. She still rules the roost as an actual doctor. So these dendritic cells are cells that come along and effectively snip off parts of the invader, and they take these through the lymph network so they can be assessed. Remember I mentioned the T cells and the B cells?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they each work differently, but very broadly.
These are different. They're lymphocytes. They're
lymphocytes. Yeah. They're part of the, and I think they make up about 30% of the white blood cells. Is that right?
Right on. Mm-hmm.
About, About 30%.
Yep.
Remember we were talking about a specific reaction as opposed to a generic one?
Mm-hmm.
Those neutrophils may come in and start a generic attack. But if you really face something that needs a specific response,
mm-hmm.
you need your T cells and B cells to get involved. These are very specific, very powerful, but also almost on the whole, every one of them useless in every situation except for one. In other words, every T cell and B cell is effectively unique,
mm-hmm.
and it is specific to a certain kind of pathogen,
mm-hmm.
and the dendritic cell...
They actually have a built-in memory for some target, right?
Some target. They have a gun. They have, the way people think about it often is they have a key and there's a lock out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this dendritic cell brings this lock around and essentially waits for the T cell to circulate, brush up against it, be fed it, and say, ah, there's my lock, and starts manufacturing a response.
Mm-hmm.
B cells are a little different. They can actually pick up directly from the infection. T cells have a little bit of an intermediary, this dendritic cell. But here you go. Now you can see you've got part of the white blood cells are these specific attackers, and some of them in generic immediate attackers, and some of them are these specific attackers waiting to be brought in and brought to life in order to get a specific response. I mean, let's just pause for a second, Dr. Hoffman. Can I make the brain exploding sound?
Yeah, it's
okay, here
extraordinarily
we go.
Complex. Yeah, exactly.
It's not only complex, it is marvelously beautiful.
And balletic.
It is.
And balletic, and it really used the analogy earlier, is that this is a really beautiful orchestration of response. And also there's built-in redundancy, you know, just as in a plane, one control fails, you know, there's a backup system, and sometimes multiple backups.
It is in defense, and it would have to be, because as you step back and think about what it would take to survive in a world filled with other organisms, it boggles the mind down to the little toes, what it would take to get to this point. It's truly, truly beautiful. I hope that answers the question of what some of those cells are. And I go into some of the others, the basophils and the eosinophils, and there's a bit in the natural killer cells, but they all are kind of components of this mm-hmm. conversation we're having.
Okay, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. Here goes. Do you suffer with chronic pain? Are you taking risky over-the-counter or prescription anti-inflammatory drugs? This is Dr. Ronald Hoppe with a better natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our guest, Matt Richtel. Okay, so what happens, for example, when we have autoimmunity or allergies? This suggests a misguided over-exuberance of the immune system or a misguided attack. You know, something innocent triggers a response that's ultimately destructive, creates a lot of negative symptoms.
Yeah, I think what, on the highest level, what allergy and autoimmunity represent, well, I'll tell you what they represent, and I'll tell you why I think they persist, and maybe even are growing. But what they represent is an overzealous immune response, an immune response that is disproportionate to the threat that provoked it, or is an response when there's no threat at all. Part of this book is about two characters, Linda and Meredith, who have autoimmune disorders, and they are so painful to hear about because these women often feel invisible. There is no parasite to point to. Mm-hmm. There is only yourself attacking yourself. That's been hard for doctors and scientists. It's hard for family members, and it's hardest of all on the people who have suffered it. So for the last few centuries, I think of these tend to hit women disproportionately because women have stronger immune systems. Mm. And over the centuries, you can hear
reasons to protect the young or protect the growing fetus.
Yes, exactly. Oh, right. We don't 100% know, but the brilliant rheumatologists I've talked to in this book will say, well, look, it looks like mothers confer immunity to their children, so they need some extra there. They've tended to play a caregiving role, which could be involved in that. There appear to be genetic connections between the genetic material associated with the immune system and with the X chromosome. The trade-off is in some ways great. Women live longer, but they do have stronger immune systems, which can lead to this imbalance that we've been talking about. Now, I just want to address something that I suppose would be on my mind, and so I hope maybe it is for some of your listeners, and if not, I apologize for belaboring it, but I guess I would wonder, why wouldn't evolution have gotten rid of this imbalance that is so persistent? Yeah. And to that, I would simply say it speaks to how hard it is, how incredibly delicate and fine-tuned this machine must be to walk the balance between keeping us healthy and not having so much inflammation that we harm ourselves.
Yeah, because we can't artificially suppress our responses with steroids, with immunosuppressant medications. But then you see sometimes these drug ads on TV for medications for MS, ulcerative colitis, rheumatoid arthritis, and you see, they blandly read a host of side effects. You may develop tuberculosis, you may develop certain unusual lymphatic cancers, so on and so on and so on. Because the imbalance, it may turn up one arm of the immune system, but that arm of the immune system may be essential for protection against other serious things.
One of the punchlines, a handful of key punchlines of this book is you tinker with your immune system at your own risk. And I'm not saying that we don't want to, we absolutely want to pursue this marvelous science like immunotherapy that helps, that helped the cancer patient who's in this book and the two women with autoimmunity, or it helped one of them rather, and that is essential. But it is really imperative that we understand what happens when we throw this system out of whack. And to go back to the fact that it goes out of whack on its own speaks to the fact that it doesn't take a lot of wind blowing to get this thing moving. It will get at, even as honed as it is by the epics of evolution, it can still get thrown off balance on its own for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. So when we push from the outside, you can only imagine what happens then.
Well, you can think of the computer control system on a 737 that's designed to keep the nose down.
Yes.
Yeah, and sometimes, 99.99% of the time that works great, but sometimes it can cause a disastrous plane crash. So,
You don't need to push hard on the thing.
And sometimes once it starts, you can't correct it by pulling up on the throttle. I mean, it's off to the races. It's very hard to suppress. So let's talk about cancer immunotherapy, because there we're doing sort of the opposite. When we try to suppress the immune system in autoimmune diseases, we can use many powerful drugs to, knock out a certain arm of the immune system, and it calms things down. In cancer immunotherapy, in a sense, we're doing the opposite. We're revving up the immune system. This is actually one of the more promising areas in cancer research, but it comes at a price. There can be some really devastating side effects.
Yeah, this is a place to hold two truths at the same time. One is hope, beautiful science, an extraordinary innovation for the human condition, and two, buyer beware. Yeah. So both things are true, and I don't want to diminish either side of it. So just a bit about cancer. And what we've learned, and why Jim Allison and another gentleman just won the Nobel Prize for what we're describing here. It is extraordinary. cancer does an extraordinary trick, or can, depending on the cancer, of basically telling the immune system to stand down and not attack. Now, you might say to yourself, well, how is that? What? I mean, how is it the immune system even can be told such a thing? Why would it allow for such communications? In fact, a big part of the immune system, I remember I mentioned all those molecules that we're learning about. Many of the molecules in the immune system are designed to turn it off.
They're brakes.
Or turn the volume down.
They're suppressor cells. They're helper cells and suppressor cells, like an accelerator and a brake. But no, that's a mechanistic analogy that's all too simple.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, I think it's well said. We need the brakes because we've just been talking about what happens when this system gets out of whack. Mm-hmm. This is a system, the bouncer and the ballet dancer, and it should be able to stop on a dime because the immune system can do more trouble to us than any disease we face. So it has built into this all these brake mechanisms, and an effective cancer will come along and shut that immune system down from attacking the tumor. What Jim Allison and others have contributed to, he just won the Nobel, or shared it, is they have figured out how, in effect, to turn the brake back off so that the immune system goes and does what it was designed to do at the very beginning, which is attack a foreign entity. Now, the challenge, of course, is you want to turn the brake back on without turning the brakes off altogether, such that the immune system goes haywire, and sometimes it does, and that's called a cytokine storm, and that is essentially a whole bunch of messages running around the body saying, attack, 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 and you go down, you go down with the bathwater. That's the balance we're striking, but it's hard not to be at least hopeful that we're learning to get a little more finely tuned as human beings ourselves.
What about inflammation? Inflammation is, there's a buzzword these days. We all feel like, oh my goodness, we have inflammation. We want to control our inflammation. But is there a positive role for inflammation? Is it part of the body's response to an insult that we don't want to suppress all the time?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. This goes back to what is a healthy response. Part of a healthy response is allowing the body to do what it does well. And so inflammation is part of the body's response. A good rule of the road. I realize people want to know what celery or avocado or whatever else they can eat, although those are part of the healthy diet. But a good rule of the road is to think of what your grandparents told you about rest and stress and diet and trying to maintain balance. Because here's the thing. If you've gotten this far in life, probably your body's doing a pretty good job. You can support your immune system rather than either try to undermine the inflammation or to boost your immune system. You can try to do the basic things that take everyday discipline, but not that much work when you get in the habit of them, like I've just described, and keep that immune system in as much a balance as you can help support. That's the key.
So in the book, you actually enumerate research that suggests that adequate sleep and stress reduction have a role to play in modulating the immune system to create a more balanced immune response. I mean, clearly, again, we don't want to talk about increasing immunity. We don't want to talk about suppressing immunity. We want to talk about balance. It's all about balance.
Supporting immunity, and stress and sleep are very closely linked. And in brief, when you get your adrenaline hormones, I realize here, Dr. Hoffman, I'm oversimplifying, but I think about things like norepinephrine and epinephrine and cortisol. Yep. What you wind up doing, for very good reason evolutionarily, is you can either suppress your immune response or cause a dysregulation and excessive inflammation. And so the details are in the book, but I would say that's a very simple mechanism that, should people have the discipline to execute on, can really help with the balance of that thing. And I kid you not, therein lies longevity and happiness.
Indeed. In the book, you talk a lot about AIDS and HIV, and You reflect on the paradox that some people appear to have a virtual resistance to HIV, and that that may actually be the direction that research may take in the future. Because right now, they've cured a couple of guys who had HIV, but it's very, very expensive and arduous. They needed a bone marrow transplant.
Yeah.
That's not
I mean, you
don't,
you, would, you wouldn't wish that treatment on your worst enemy.
Exactly.
And so, and I hesitate even, I realize it's cured in the sense they are in, I don't know, full remission or whatever the word would be,
yeah.
But it's not a, as they would say in Silicon Valley, that's not a scalable model.
Exactly.
And so when we think about Robert Hoff, this character whose immune system is under study by the National Institutes of Health because he has successfully held HIV at bay since 1977, Halloween night when
wow.
he got it,
wow.
We learn two things from him. One, we learn about some paths we might study to look at what an extraordinary immune system does to fight such a nasty disease that targets the immune system itself. But I would focus on one other piece of Robert Hoff, and I think in the book you'll see some of the details about his immune system. But what I find really interesting is it goes back and speaks to the value of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And if there weren't diverse immune systems like Robert Hoff's,
mm-hmm.
we would never have survived previous plagues. We need to have diversity.
Yeah, exactly. There are certain outliers who have extraordinary capacity to resist diseases, and new diseases crop up all the time. So, the next pandemic, we may need a few people with those types of genetic makeups.
We may, and it's interesting, it's poetic in his case, because when he got AIDS in 1977, gay men were just demonized in the United States, well, probably around the world, but, I only know the U.S. story as well.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, it was diversity that helped the human species. People were calling him and his brethren alien or outsiders or noxious, or they need to be any number of
they need to be quarantined, like Typhoid Marys, basically.
Yeah, but and again, I just want to add to that. That was not only the case medically. You could understand why people would be scared of HIV when we didn't understand it, but they were saying that of just gay men in general, like, you're not part of our family, you're not part of our house of worship, you're not whatever. But it turned out that he symbolizes the necessity, not the okayness of acceptance, but the necessity of acceptance of diversity, because it's what allows the human species to survive.
That's an interesting concept. So in your book, you leave us with a reflection that at some level, our immune systems are designed for planned obsolescence. I mean, as we age, our immune
yes.
systems change, and we become more prone to various health problems. Is that part of the evolutionary scheme?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I began this book, I begin it with a friend of mine who rises from cancer, and I begin by asking the question, which I asked of myself, is this the moment where we're going to find the fountain of youth, the Holy Grail? Have we discovered everlasting life? And I wind up concluding, and I take the readers on this narrative path, that in fact the immune system, as much as it is there to defend us zealously for a period of years, plays a role in our own demise.
Hmm.
And the reason for that is it is tailored to help us survive as individuals to a point, but ultimately to survive as a species. And for us to survive as a species, we must each die. I mean, I'm sorry to be so crass about this. It's
right.
really easy to intellectualize. It really hurts when it's you or your family. Well, certainly when it's you, but a family member, a loved one,
mm-hmm.
whatever. But if we don't die, we don't make room for the mutation, for the change that allows us to survive in this world in myriad ways, including learning to fight in the arms race against the next version of pathogen.
Mm-hmm.
We must die. The immune system, in ways I outline in the book, actually builds in some of the mechanisms that kill us.
As much as we try to cheat it, it's not part of nature's plan to make every mortal immortal.
Well said.
Okay. Well, okay, so great introduction to the immune system. I found it much less painful than my immunology primer in medical school, which made my eyes glaze over. I mean, it really is nice because you interweave stories, personal stories, stories of people who experience challenging immune situations, and it helps really to beautifully illustrate what's going on with the immune system, and also ushers in an understanding for people faced with autoimmune problems, cancer. More and more, I think we as medical consumers are going to be faced with options and choices, and I think your book helps a lot of people better understand what those are about. So congratulations. Yeah. The book is just out. It's called An Elegant Defense.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hoffman.
My pleasure. Thank you, Matt Rich Richtel, for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. With a flu shot unreliable this year, a particularly virulent form of the flu circulating, and antiviral drug stockpiles dwindling, the best medicine is preventive medicine to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests from my audience for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to help get through the season. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Seasonal Immune Support Protocol. My supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com for more information. In addition to the Seasonal Immune Support Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our Supplement Starter Kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle, the same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get 10% off and free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.